So this one of the sharing of a soul. Trials sent to God by soul which is particularly loved by him. Temptations, darkness, Satan. Interesting, no? At times I'm asking why Jesus allowed this to happen. What take away the Satan? Well, temptation is a time we gain the merit in a certain sense, no? You have to work hard, struggle for the love of Jesus. The soul's love for God is still not such as God would have it. The soul suddenly loses the tangible perception of God's presence. Various defects and imperfections rise up within it, and it must fight them furiously. All her faults lift up their heads. But the soul's vigilance is great. The former awareness of the presence of God gives place to coldness and spiritual dryness. The soul has no taste for spiritual exercises. It cannot pray, either in the old way or in the manner in which it had just begun to pray. It struggles this way and that, but can find no satisfaction. God had hidden himself from it, and it can find no consolation in creatures, nor can any of these creatures find a way of consoling it. The soul craves passionately for God, but sees its own misery. It begins to sense God's justice. It seems to it that it has lost all the gifts that God has given it. Its mind is dimmed and darkness filled. Unspeakable torment begins. The soul tries to explain its state to the confessor, but is not understood and is assailed by an even greater unrest. Satan begins his work. Faith staggers under the impact. The struggle is fierce. The soul tries hard to cling to God by an act of will. With God's permission, Satan goes even further. Hope and love are put to the test. These temptations are terrible. God supports the soul in secret, so to speak. The soul is not aware of this, but otherwise it would be impossible to stand firm. And God knows very well how much he can allow to befall a soul. So, Jesus knows to what extent we can stand the temptation, but he allows it to happen. The soul is tempted to unbelief in respect to revealed truths and to insincerity towards the confessor, doubt. Satan says to it, look, no one understands you. Why speak about all this? Words that terrify it sung in its ears, and it seems to the soul that it is uttering this against God. It sees that it does not want to see. It hears what it does not want to hear. And oh, it is a terrible thing at times like these not to have an experienced confessor. At times we need someone to give a helping hand. The soul carries the whole burden alone. However, one could make every effort to find, if it is at all possible, a well-informed confessor. For the soul can collapse under the burden and come to the very edge of the precipice. All these trials are heavy and difficult. God does not send them to a soul which has not already been admitted to a deeper intimacy with him, and which has not yet tasted the divine delights. So the temptation comes also because you have already received sufficient grace. We experience the presence of God first, then this temptation comes. Besides, in this, God has his own plans, which for us are impenetrable. God often prepares a soul in this way for his future designs and great works. He wants to try it out, try it as pure gold is tried. But this is not yet the end of the testing. There is still the trial of trials, the complete abandonment of the soul by God. When a soul comes out victorious from the preceding trials, even though it may stumble here and there, it fights on valiantly, humbly, calling upon God, "Save me, I'm perishing." And it is still able to fight on. At this point, however, the soul is engulfed in a terrible night. It sees within itself only sin. It feels terrible. It sees itself completely abandoned by God. It feels itself to be the object of his hatred, God's hatred. It is but one step away from despair. The soul does its best to defend itself. It tries to stir up its confidence, but prayer is an even greater torment for it, as this prayer seems to arouse God to an even greater anger. The soul finds itself poised on the summit of a lofty mountain on the very brink of precipice. The soul is drawn to God, but feels repulsed. All other sufferings and tortures in the world are as nothing compared with this sensation into which it has been plunged, namely, that of being rejected by God. No one can bring it any relief. It finds itself completely alone. There is no one to defend it. It raises its eyes to heaven, but is convinced that this is not for her. For her, all is lost. It falls deeper and deeper from darkness to darkness, and it seems to it that it has lost forever the God it used to love so dearly. This thought is torture beyond all description. But the soul does not agree to it and tries to leave its gaze towards heaven, but in vain. And this makes the torture even more intense. If God wishes to keep the soul in such darkness, no one will be able to give it light. It experiences rejection by God in a vivid and terrifying manner. From its heart burst forth painful moans, so painful that no priest will comprehend it unless he himself has been through these trials. In the midst of this, the evil spirit adds to the soul's suffering, mocking it. "Will you persist in your faithfulness? This is your reward. You are in our power." But Satan has only as much influence over the soul as God allows him. And God knows how much we can bear. So don't be afraid. Even temptation won't more than we can sustain. God knows to what extent. But Satan has only as much influence over the soul as God allows him, And God knows how much we can bear. What have you gotten out of your mortifications? Says Satan. And now of your fidelity to the rule, what use are all these efforts? You have been rejected by God. This word rejected becomes a fire which penetrates every nerve to the marrow of the bone. It pierces right through her entire being. The ordeal reaches its climax. The soul no longer looks for help anywhere. It strains into itself and loses sight of everything. It is as though it has accepted the torture of being abandoned. This is a moment for which I have no words. This is the agony of the soul. When for the first time this moment was drawing near, I was snatched from it by virtue of holy obedience. The directress of novices, alarmed by my appearance, sent me off to confession. But the confessor did not understand me, and I experienced no relief whatsoever. Oh Jesus, give us experienced priests. When I told this priest I was undergoing infernal tortures, he answered that he was not worried about my soul because he saw in it a great grace of God. But I understood nothing of this. Not even the least glimmer of light broke through to my soul. Then my physical strength began to fail me, and I could no longer carry out my duties, nor could I any longer hide my sufferings. Although I did not say a word about them, the look of pain on my face betrayed me. The superior told me that the sisters had come to her saying that when they look at me in the chapel, they are moved to pity because I look so terrible. Yet despite all efforts, the soul is unable to conceal such sufferings. Jesus, you alone know how the soul engulfed in darkness moans in the midst of these torments, and despite all this, thirsts for God, as burning lips thirst for water. It dies and withers. It dies a death without death. That to say, it cannot die. All its efforts come to nothing. It is under a powerful hand. Now the soul comes under the power of the Just One. All exterior temptations cease. All that surrounds it becomes silent, like a dying person who loses contact with everything around it. The person's entire soul is in the hand of the Just God, the thrice holy God, rejected for all eternity. This is the culminating moment, and God alone can test the soul in this way, because he alone knows what a soul can endure. When a soul has been saturated through and through by this internal fire, it is, as it were, cast headlong into great despair. My soul experienced this moment when I was all alone in my cell. When my soul began to sink into this despair, I felt that the end was near. But I seized my little crucifix and clenched it tightly in my hand. And I felt my body separate itself from my soul. And though I wanted to go to my superiors, I no longer had any physical strength. I uttered my last word, I trust in your mercy. that as if her last word of her life, he couldn't do anything. She said, finish. And it seemed to me that I provoked God to an even greater anger. And now I was drowned in despair. And all that was left me was a moan of unadulterated pain, which from time to time tore itself from my soul. The soul is in agony. And it seems to me that I will remain in this state because by my own strength, I could not emerge from it. Every recollection of God opened up an unspeakable ocean of suffering. And yet, despite this, there is something within the soul which is drawn to him, though it seemed to her, for this only, that she suffered more. The memory of the love with which God formerly surrounded it is still another kind of suffering. His gaze pierces it, and everything within the soul is burned by his gaze. After some time, other sisters came into the cell and found him almost dead. She was frightened and went to find the directress of novices, who in the name of holy obedience ordered me to get up from the ground. My strength returned immediately, and I got up, trembling. The directress recognized immediately the state of my soul and spoke to me about the inscrutable mercy of God, saying, "Do not be distressed about anything, sister. I command this to you in virtue of obedience." Then she said to me, "I see now, sister, that God is calling you to a high degree of holiness. The Lord wants to draw you very close to himself, since he has allowed these things to happen to you so soon. Be faithful to God, sister, because this is a sign that he wants you to have a higher place in heaven." However, I did not understand anything of these words. When I went into the chapel, I felt as though my soul has been set free from everything, as though I had just come forth from the hand of God. I perceived the inviolability of my soul. I felt I was a tiny child. Suddenly, I saw the Lord interiorly, and he said to me, "Fear not, my daughter, I am with you." In that single moment, all the darkness and torments vanished. My senses were inundated with unspeakable joy, and the faculties of my soul filled with light. I want to add that, although my soul was already in the race of his love, traces of my past tortures remained on my body for 2 days. A deathly pale face and bloodshot eyes. Jesus alone knows what I suffered. What I have written is very poor compared to reality. I cannot put it in words. It seems to me that I had come back from the other world. I see an aversion of everything that is created. I snuggle to the heart of God like a baby to its mother's breast. I see everything differently now. I am conscious of what the Lord, by one single word, has done in my soul, and I live by it. I shudder at the recollection of this past torture. I would not have believed that one could suffer so if I had not gone through it myself. This is completely spiritual suffering. However, in all these sufferings and struggles, I was not omitting Holy Communion. But it seemed to me that I should not communicate. I went for Holy Communion to the directress and told her that I could not approach the sacrament because it seemed to me that I should not do so. But she would not permit me to omit Holy Communion. So I went, and I understand now there was only obedience that saved me. Obedience. The directress herself told me that later, that my trials had passed quickly. And this solely because you were obedient, sister. And it was through the power of obedience that you struggled through this so bravely. It is true that it was the Lord Himself who brought me out of this torment. By my fidelity to obedience, did please Him. Though these are frightening things, the soul should not be too fearful, because God will never test us beyond what we are able to bear. On the other hand, He may never send us such sufferings, but I write this because if it pleases the Lord to let us so pass through such sufferings, we should not be afraid, but insofar as this depends on the soul itself, it should remain faithful to God. God will do a soul no harm, because He is love itself. And in this unfathomable love has called it into being. However, when I was so tormented, I myself did not understand this. Afterwards, He can write many beautiful things. But in between the suffering, even Himself, He knows, but you know, suffering is suffering. Oh my God, I've come to know that I'm not of this earth. You, O Lord, have poured this profound awareness into my soul. My communion is more with heaven than with earth, though I in no way neglect my duties. During those times, I had no spiritual director. I was without any kind of guidance whatever. I begged the Lord, but He did not give me a director. Jesus Himself has been my master from the days of my infancy up to the present moment. He accompanied me across all the deserts and through all dangers. I see clearly that God alone could have led me through such great perils unharmed, with my soul untarnished and passing victoriously through all difficulties, immense though they are. Going out later on, the Lord did give me a director. Thank you for listening. It's hard time to pass through the difficult moment with Sister Faustina. She has obedience, and she promised. She said, "God will not test us out of our strength. It's always under our limit. God is love. Just don't be afraid. Even if you have a little bit suffering, take it easy." You can imagine what she did, went through. She said, "Even words cannot explain." You may say the same thing. No word can explain your pain, your suffering, right? Don't you trust? The last word should be, "Jesus, I trust in You."